Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Above the Bar podcast, where each week we belly up to the bar with a new guest, find out what they do, who they are, and what makes them great. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Alrighty, folks, welcome back to the Above the Bar podcast. It's your host, Sean. It is probably the most useless week in all of business this week. If you own a business, if you know anybody who owns a business, trades in stocks, or does anything under the sun, this is the by far the most useless week where nothing will happen, nothing will change. It is the week in between Christmas and New Year because everyone is on vacation, no one is around, all those wonderful things. But that makes it a perfect time for you to listen to the Above the Bar podcast. And joining us from, I don't even know where, and he saved himself. I'm just going to say this. He saved himself before the show from all forms of harassment from me. He'll have to tell me where he's at. We didn't even get to. We were talking about other bullshit beforehand. But, you know, joining me, another Marine who has decided that there's no reason to grow our hair out. It's better off short this way. We like it. It's easier to care for. But I let mine all grow down. He just kept his short. But joining us, and Paul, I'm going to jack your whole last name up because that's what I do. Joining us today, Mr. Paul Hilinski.
You did great.
Did I get it right?
You got it right.
Look at that. And look, do you need one of the, I mean, just for, because we care about this, do you just need me at some point to be like, Hilinski, that's come over here.
They but always just, call me Ski. So
just that's what every, you, look, every, anyone, every person in the Marine Corps with the last name of anything Ski, I had a Swiderski that I work with. Ski, just fucking Ski.
Yep.
It's easier that way because we're simple
creatures. I enjoyed it. It's good.
Well, Paul and I are going to be talking about business, talking about empathy, what you can do as a leader to promote those kind of things within your workforce. But before we get into all those kind of things, let's go ahead and get some house cleaning done here, folks, as we need to do every week. So over my right shoulder, we got the big board for Sticker and a Cause. And if you're in California, you can hate me today, bitches. Hate me all you want, because we were supposed, you know, that ass whooping just didn't happen to the Ravens this week. That ass whooping just never manifested itself. But Mr. Irrelevant was irrelevant on Monday. I just want you to know that. But as always, we got the big board for Sticker and a Cause. Maybe you have something you're supporting. You got your own website. You got your own, whatever it is. You can reach out to us on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, TikTok, Instagram, anywhere that you can imagine. Even our email address is the Above the Bar podcast. Let me know what you got going on. I'll tell you where to send this sticker to. Send it to me. We'll read about it live on the air with your information. That's Sticker and a Cause. Now, we also got to talk about our sponsors. You can't forget your sponsors. And our sponsors are Budget Blinds of East Greenbush and Budget Blinds of Hudson and Coxsackie, New York. They're just finishing up their big sale for the month of December, 30% off of all motorized window treatments. And they're just about to announce, and you can get on this a little bit early, in the month of January, they are promoting up to 18 months interest-free financing. It's 0% interest for 18 months. And that doesn't even start until after your windows are at, your window treatments are installed. So in some cases, you could have ordered it and it could take almost 20 months before it gets there. That's Budget Blinds of Hudson and Coxsackie, New York, and Budget Blinds of East Greenbush, New York. Reach out to them. They'll explain all the details. You do have to qualify for it. But once again, folks, that's Budget Blinds of East Greenbush and Hudson, East Greenbush and Budget Blinds of Hudson and Coxsackie, New York. All right, Paul, it's all done. All the house cleaning's done.
There we go. We're ready.
Do we want to just like use all the terms that we never wanted to hear during our career? Like, hey, Devil Dog. Hey, Marine. Hey, Toofy Onion. Hey there, Battle of Bella Woods.
Motivator.
Like, do you want to use all those right now, or we want to be adults?
I don't know. It could be. They'll come out. They'll come out throughout this.
They have to. I mean,
yes.
I catch myself all the time, like with texting. I remember texting people and putting GTG, and they were like, "Well, when are you going to be back?" "I'm like, what do you mean? When am I going to be back? GTG, good to go." They're like, "Oh, I thought that meant got to go."
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, shut up.
I've been very businessified now. It's almost worked its way a fair amount out of me, but I have a few Marines at my place that are leaders as well. And sometimes we'll be like, you know, we'll give it a hoorah, or I'm in these meetings and people are looking at us like, what? We're like, and I'll be like, hey, Devil Dog, could you do this? And the guy was, you know, he was a corporal in the Marine Corps. I was a sergeant in the Marine Corps. So it was like, oh, God, it was funny just in these the dynamic.
Oh, that's now you bring that up and you've got all these things going on here. Now, what is the industry you're in that kind of brought you to do the things that you're doing? And folks, I'm going to be running Paul's website underneath here. And if you're listening to the audio afterwards, it's Paul Hylinski, and Hylinski is Hylenski.com, PaulHylinski.com. But you've got a lot going on here, Paul. I mean, just to say a minimum, what brought you to, you know, all these different avenues of what you're writing about, what you're talking to people about? What brought that about for you?
Well, I got to start with where it all started, which is my dad. So my dad actually worked for a large aerospace company. It was an hourly operator, you know, blue collar worker. The aerospace industry used to be horrible in the 80s. I mean, they laid people off every couple years. That's how they balanced their budgets and their books. You know, and what they did was they pumped these people full of stress and just made their lives miserable. And the 1980s mentality of leadership was, we'll treat you as bad as we want to because you won't leave because you have a pension. So these companies thought that people were staying just because they had loyalty to the company, but it wasn't because of that. It was because they had a pension. They had the long-term play. So it's better to eat crap, you know, knowing that you have a long-term play. So my dad, you know, had to suffer through that, where I can remember years, especially during the holiday time, where he didn't have a job because they laid him off right before the holidays so they wouldn't have to, you know, worry about balancing the budget.
Stay in the black at that point.
Yeah, I mean, God. And so what they did was, they didn't realize these people that they were doing this to were bringing that home to their families, all that frustration and anger and everything. So I saw that growing up as a young child, and I thought, big companies don't give a damn about anybody, you know, that works for them. And I always told my dad, if I ever got an opportunity to do something about it, I would. So I didn't, you know, go to a big time college. I decided to go to the Marine Corps. Yeah, that's right. Well, I went to the School of Hard Knocks.
You went to MCU.
Yeah, that's right. So. And I went into Marine Corps, and I saw some of the best and the worst leaders that I would ever see in my life, right? And then when I got out of the Marine Corps, I went to the place that I work now, which is a large aerospace company, and I started from the ground level, which was just like a frontline leader. And I can remember I actually applied for an hourly operator position because I was a helicopter mechanic in the Marine Corps. I thought, well, I can drill, countersink, and you know, do all the stuff with. I was like, this, I got this. Well, I remember because I had gotten my degree in the Marine Corps, when I applied and actually was at my interview, they said, well, you have a degree. And I said, yeah, I have a degree. And so they were like, well, what do you think about leading people? And I said, if I can lead people in the Marine Corps, I sure as hell can lead people here. And they were like, oh, that's great. So then they started me as like a frontline leader. And I was the guy that would work 20 plus hour shifts, and I would be the first to go in and the last to leave. And it through business, that wasn't how business was run. The leader was the, you know, last to come and the first to leave and go home. And the hourly workers were the people that did the stuff. And, you know, that I always say this, but, you know, for me, it was I rose through the ranks because of the people that I was around. And because I led with human leadership and treated them like they were my father or my mother, I treated them with empathy. So they treated me exceptionally well and actually built my career. And I even to this day, you know, I'm the operations leader for the plant. And even to this day, I still tell those people, because some of them are still there, that you're the reason why I'm in this position. And now I'm going to change everything. And that was part of my change journey. You know, and for me, it started all with my dad.
And it's interesting that your dad was in aerospace. You get into aviation. You were a flight liner, right?
Yep, I was a flight liner. Yeah.
Again, folks, we ain't telling you what the hell that shit means.
That's right.
You were a flight liner. And look, folks, if you're finding me through Paul or Paul through me, make sure you're hitting like and share and doing all those things. It may sound cliche, but that's how these messages grow. That's how these algorithms work, and we really appreciate it. But one of the things that I wanted to kind of ask you is, you talk a lot about, and you just said it, you talk a lot about empathy as a leader. And one of the things I think gets confused, and I'm curious how you approach this with people, is I think a lot of people confuse empathy and sympathy. And they're like, well, if you're, oh, you know, I feel so bad for this person, I really understand what they're going through, you're being sympathetic. How do you show someone or lead or train that sympathy versus empathy?
Yep. And I'll tell you, that was one of the hardest things to break out of, this like 1980s style leadership, because most people above you think that you're just being too nice to people and they're going to take advantage of you. That's not what empathy is. So for me, empathy was living through another person's shoes in everything that I do. So when I make decisions, I think of my dad, right? I think of, I'm about to do this to somebody. What would it look like if it was done to my dad, right? Or my mom. And I think about things before that I do them. And empathy is a cornerstone of what makes good leaders different. And there's, because we've all seen really great leaders and really bad leaders, but the really great leaders can empathize with you because they've maybe been where you are, right? I can realize the mistakes that people make because I've made those same mistakes. I always say, you're never going to make as many mistakes that I've made, right? So just tell me the truth, right? And then all of a sudden it breaks down everything because they say, okay, well, he knows what I'm going through. And I think here's the biggest thing, and Simon Sinek said this best, right? The difference between the military, which is why the military is so great with leadership and business, it's because in the military, they give people awards for sacrificing themselves for the good of others. But in business, they give people awards for sacrificing everyone for the good of them, right? And that is so true in traditional leadership. And that's what we need to break, because the people that work in our teams are smart. They're smarter than we ever will be, right? And so if we think as leaders they don't realize what's happening, then we're delusional. So it's so important that we really focus on driving empathy. And that's empathy to everything, personal life things. I always tell everybody, your 100% effort today isn't going to be the same as your 100% effort tomorrow, right? Every single day is going to be different, because sometimes you might have a bad day. Some days you might have been not feeling well. And having empathy to make mistakes or to not perform 100% perfect, right, all of a sudden changes the game in any type of leadership.
And it's such a huge piece like that. And you hear it more. I think it's a generational thing. You've said it, you know, in the 80s, it was the beatings will continue until morale improves was really the mindset. You know, you saw maybe a little shift in the 90s, but I don't really believe so. It wasn't till, personally, I think the late 20 teens until today that we see that shift. But how do you train? I mean, I hear you talking about it. I know how we learn it. You mm-hmm. could look at a Marine and you could say, hey, man, I get it. I've carried that box myself. I understand it. But the job's got to get done. We all understood the job's got to get done. How do you keep somebody, though, from a leadership training for civilians who've never done it, the way we did, from going and almost going, I know that box is heavy. Let me carry it for you. And then becoming that sympathetic leader where they're truly doing everything and the people who should be doing it aren't. How do you keep them from making that shift?
So I think the big thing there is, as a leader, like, I give out very strict and very high expectations. My expectation levels are like I'm a Marine. But what I've done was built systems so that people could make mistakes, so that they could have bad days and we would still survive, right? And for training like new supervisors, I'll tell you, the first thing I did was I started hiring people that were great at things that I sucked at.
Amen.
Right? And so I was really good at business and I was really good at leadership, but I didn't know the technical stuff of how to build a thrust reverser or an aerospace part. I didn't know how to do that. So I started hiring people from the hourly ranks to supervisor and manager positions. So because now I was well-rounded. Well, the beauty part of that is they knew exactly the things that I didn't know. But some of them didn't know Excel or they didn't know the business stuff, right? So now I had to create training plans that was individualized for each of them. Well, what I was actually teaching them was empathy, because they were walking onto a job where they didn't know everything. They didn't know everything that I knew, and I didn't know everything that they knew. So I was basically breeding empathy into it, because when the new hire walks on that they have to deal with, now all of a sudden they say, well, man, I didn't know how to do an Excel chart until somebody showed me. Right. So now you have this bred in empathy, and then I reinforce it. And it's to be Marine, you know, to be a Marine or whatever. I still have it in me. The business world has taken it out, but I'm very clear about it. You either adhold to my expectations or there'll be a growth plan. And sometimes that growth plan is an out plan. Right. But as a leader, like the worst behavior that I tolerate my fellow leaders to have will become the new company culture. We have to realize that as leaders, right? If I tolerate a bad behavior or someone not adhering to my code of conduct, which I've started, you know, we have a code of conduct.
Do they have to carry the card? Do they have the
card? Yeah, no, I don't make them carry the card. That would be cool though. And now you gave me an idea, dude.
I need you to keep this in your pocket.
I know, right? And flash it at any time in the middle of the night.
If I ask for it, you need to pull it out of your pocket.
Yes. Then I'll really be the cuckoo. I think that's the thing, right? And so everyone knows, and I have the best part too. So I have an Air Force guy that works for me.
I'm sorry.
I know we mess with him constantly, but he's amazing, right? Because he actually sat all these new supervisors down and said, look, it's very easy. You work to Paul's agenda and your people work to your agenda. Right. And he's like, as long as that is uphold, then the system works. Right. And when he explained that to them like that, they all understood a little bit more of what I was trying. So that's why the vision's so important. And then they work to the vision, outline vision that I have. So it works so perfect because we ingrained empathy in there. So when they have to make decisions, in the back of their head, they're saying, am I being empathetic? And sometimes you're right. Sometimes the line gets crossed a little where it goes from empathy to sympathy. But then I go back to my dad and say, maybe a little's not too bad. What would I have wanted my dad to have, right? And so it always errs us on the side of being a more human leader.
It's an interesting approach that you're using somebody like your father as kind of your platform or your standard for how you operate. And I love that you're using commander's intent, because that's all I hear right now is,
yeah,
I need a hole dug, and it needs to be in a very round hole and a nice hole. I don't care how you dig it. I don't care where you what you use to dig it, but this is where the hole gets dug at, and you're using that process. But But bringing that in, like, again, I'm going to stay with this culture piece because I came from before my currently owning my own company, and I did exactly what you did. I hired my son to be my installer. I can install, but he's way better at it than I am. I watch the things he does, and he's an absolute talent. He has a real skill at it. But I also watched young leaders, what you would call these, I don't know what else to call them, millennial leaders, who don't understand process of chain of command.
Yep.
They think you just jump through things and they just move through things. You talk about that psychological safety in a work environment. And I'm really curious of, does that apply where you use that, you know, that psychological mindset that, hey, you never, you know, because I think that's a safety feature to me, chain of command, the way things run. Is that part of it for you? Like, how did you bring that ability and culture into a workplace? Like you said, you're taking an 80s mindset and you're dragging it into the modern age. How do you do that?
Well, it was really hard. And the first time I brought it up in a meeting, I said, I gave the whole like research behind it, right? So it was a term coined by Amy Edmondson, who's a Harvard business professor, right? And she talked about psychological safety in a team. So I gave, you know, the background on it. And I said, we're going to pump psychological safety into the factory. And I said, and we're going to change everything. They made memes about me. The salaried engineers made memes about me and literally made fun of me. I mean, it was horrible. They were posting stuff in the bathrooms about how I was going to ruin the company with psychological safety because all they thought was it's going to be nice to everybody. And so the crazy thing about it is, and I explain this, and just for the viewers and the listeners.
I just got to ask, how many of you are still employed there?
Oh, they actually about half of them. The beauty part is I left everybody because I said, I'm going to show you that it works. And 6 months later, we had already started the shift. Now, 3 years later, we're more profitable than we've ever been in the history of the company, right? And this dumb 42-year-old kid figured out the message. And the population of workers that we have are the most trained and amazing people on the face of the planet, that we provide the best quality and best aerospace parts because we treat them amazing and they treat us amazing. But psychological safety isn't just, I want to be nice. It's got four levels. You have to build on top of each other, right? So it's like building a house. The first level is inclusive safety. Everybody wants to feel like they're a part of a team or a family. That's why the Marine Corps does what it does. It's because it wants to break you down and make you feel like you're a Marine, like you belong to the few and the proud, right? And so in business, we have to do the same thing. So we have to drive team mentality. We have to drive team events. I even let the teams have a lunch where they get extra time on their lunch, provided they go into a conference room and have lunch together as a team and don't talk any work. They get an extra hour on their time for lunch. And all it's doing, everybody used to say, well, you're stupid. You're wasting all this time and productivity. No, I'm forging a team which is going to perform better. So this whole inclusive safety, once you feel like you belong to something, and Simon Sinek did it good, which is the circle of safety. If you think you have to defend yourself from danger, you're never going to be innovative, right? In the cavemen times, if I didn't think that you would wake me up if the saber-toothed tiger came, I'd never go to sleep and I would have died.
Right.
Right? So it's how do you provide this inclusive safety that you're a team and you'll be together as a team and you'll look out for each other. The second level is learning safety. We have to feel like we can fail and learn together. That's the only way innovation and growth happens. And if I think that you're going to ridicule me every time I make a mistake, I'm not going to tell you when I made the mistakes. Right. And that's why the 1980s mentality of leadership promoted this I lie, cheat, and steal my way out of a mistake, because if I make one, you fire me. So I had to normalize mistakes. This is another thing. They made fun of me horribly. I said, if you make a mistake, no matter what it is, I don't care if you drive into the side of the building with a fork truck. As long as you get off that fork truck and you call your manager and you say exactly what happened and help us fix it so that it can't happen again, you are not in trouble. Oh, my God. They went off the rails.
What, why?
Because they said you're gonna instantly take away accountability. And what I was doing was adding
more. Creating accountability.
Yes. But they didn't see it because of the 1980s mentality. Everybody's brainwashed. So, and what happened was people didn't have to lie anymore about these mistakes. So our defects went down and down and down and down. I mean, we literally reshaped how we did our quality because people were felt comfortable just saying, hey, I screwed up. But here's what, if this had worked right differently, or if I had this, I wouldn't have screwed up. And then we put it in play and it never happens again.
Well, you're in a safety critical service in aerospace. You can't pull over to a cloud and just get over and fix something. And it's interesting. I'm going to pause you there for a second because I did staffing and we focused on manufacturing. We were very heavily in the manufacturing world. And I can't tell you how many times I heard, you know, manufacturers calling me like, I'm letting your guy go. Well, what happened? Oh, they got in an accident on a forklift, or, you know, there was damage to a truck. Okay. Well, did you talk to them about it? Well, I did, but they lied about it. Okay. Well, that's because they knew you were going to fire them. So did you let them know, like, hey, we don't fire people as long as they're honest with us about it? Well, no. Okay. So you just fucking, the guy's been there for the last 90 days, you love him, made one mistake, and we're up. So you, that's just amazing that you were able to break that. So level three, what's level three?
No. So, and that was critical, right? So once I had everybody telling the truth about everything and then normalizing mistakes, what happened was when my leaders that I had newly promoted made mistakes, they felt comfortable to tell me. But then even more than that, their people felt comfortable to tell them that they were making mistakes, right? And it started this really great chain of growth because we were changing into a growth mentality. And so the third level is contribution safety. You got to have people feel safe to contribute their ideas and their effort, right? Because people are giving you ideas and they're giving you effort. The best way that I saw that this, had been done in my research is actually Pixar. So Pixar does this brain trust. Everybody wanted to know why they got so many hit movies in a row. And it's because of this brain trust. They have a building, they have a room in their building where over top of the door, it says every opinion matters. And in that room, it's a horizontal hierarchy. Even if the president of the company is sitting in that room, he is just one other voice in that room. So they all have the power and the ability to challenge each other and to contribute ideas and then challenge each other's ideas to try to come up with the best solution. And this horizontal hierarchy is something I used. So now every quality defect and every safety injury is reviewed with hourly operators, mechanical engineers, quality engineers, leaders, the entire gambit. I asked for volunteers. Right. And this meeting started with five people and then it went to 55 people, right, where we're at now. So it's a huge, huge meeting and everybody has the ability to give their opinion and contribute. So it's absolutely amazing. Now, the fourth level, the highest level, is the hardest to get to. And that's challenge safety. That's I feel safe to challenge existing processes or even my leader. And as leaders, particularly in business, leaders feel infallible. I'm the boss, right? You hear that. Well, you're a human being and you are fallible. You can make a mistake, right? So when we as leaders admit our own mistakes and then allow people to challenge our decisions or our ideas in a mutually respectful way, man, it changes the game. Everybody always used to tell me when I first started this, because I'd ask in meetings, I'd say, what does everybody think? Nobody would answer, right? Because I'd get done saying, okay, here we go. I made a decision. What do you think about that decision? I wouldn't get any answer. So then what I started doing was anonymous surveys with a QR code. So I'd say, okay, since you won't talk to me, here's this survey, a QR code. I don't know who the hell wrote what or did or put on there. I can't find it out. And then all of a sudden these questions, or why would you do this, right? Or all these blind sides that I never saw. So what I did was I responded to all of them and said, I would really love for this to be an open dialogue rather than a survey. And then I gave them thanks, right? I literally told the group of people, I said, that's everything that I wanted. Well, slowly but surely that started happening in a more public forum where I would ask, what did you think about this? What did you think about this new decision? And people would come out and say, yeah, it was great. Or they'd say, no, you don't know. We were struggling with attrition. This is perfect. We were struggling with attrition. So I wanted to try to incentivize the people training and the new hires, try to bridge them together, right? Because that way I could forge a support system and then hopefully keep people. So I said, what I'm going to do is start a monthly luncheon between all the new hires and all the people volunteering to training. That way they get something every month and the rest of the people will see, hey, they're getting something. Maybe I want to be a part of that, right? I had the most junior female who was in the meeting, that this like, you know, quality engagement meeting. And she said, hey, I don't think that's a good idea. And everybody was like, they were like, what? Like that was a great idea. And I said, well, no, please explain. The way you respond as a leader is important, right? So I said, please explain. And she said, well, what about all the people who are individual contributors that just really like working here and they do a great job every day? Basically, they don't want to train because they don't want to have to deal with that. They just like doing their thing and do a great job of it and go home. She said, you'll disenfranchise them. And I said, you're right. I was like, you really are right. So what I did was I started an incentivized system for individual performers. And then I still did the luncheon and everything for the new hires. So now win-win everywhere, but had this junior employee not felt comfortable in front of a room predominantly male, but she felt comfortable enough to question me. And then we got a better decision. So those are the four levels: inclusive safety, learning safety, contribution safety, and challenge safety.
And folks, if you're just popping in and you're hearing Paul or you're listening to the audio, make sure you're checking out paulhylinski.com. He's got all this on his website. You got four books. We got to figure out how in 3 years in this leadership role, or
yeah,
we got to figure this out, how you wrote four books in that. But Aunt Rose, who was on last week, we love Crazy Aunt Rose. Also her son Clay, who's been on, he's got his new album out. She says she has retired 36 years of a corporate mentality that was not, in quotes, safe. I have seen what you were saying work well though. A company I know of locally allowed paid off site volunteer work and other things that make team members feel safe and truly part of the team. Aunt Rose, everything that Paul's talking about, it's such a shift. But I wanted to, now I'm going to throw a curveball at you here. And again, folks, checking out Paul's website. If you got a website, I keep it up next to me so I can. That's what I do because I know how I am. And he's got speaking engagements, online courses, all these things. How much now? I love that you said that as pensions have gone away, that mindset of staying with a company has gone away. I worked for Amtrak for my first 7 years out of the Marine Corps. I had railroad retirement. Like, there were guys that were like, look, man, you will get addicted to this money. And when you can see that railroad retirement at the end, it's hard to walk away from it. But the other thing that I wanted to ask you about is how much of the current, and I guess, change in leadership or inability to take direction also comes from we're losing that baby boomer generation. It's basically all but gone out of the workforce. There's a few, you know, stragglers here and there, but we've also lost that heavily served military mindset of do what I've asked you to do, get it done, and then you can come back and talk to me about it. But I need you to just go do what I've asked you to do first. Stop asking me questions. You're holding shit up. Like, how much of that, like what you're talking about is a shift because we don't have it, but Is that why we don't have it? Do you think, does that make sense what I'm asking?
Yeah. No, I and honestly, Bob Chapman, who's the CEO of Barry Waymiller, which is a really great, you know, machinery company, but he made a comment in one of his speeches, and it said over 88% of the American workers in the United States, and this is now, and it was true back then too, but they're disengaged. So the reason, part of the shift is all the millennials that are now predominantly in the workforce, right? I mean, I'm technically a millennial because I was born in 1981, right? So I was right on that edge. But all of us, right? All of us that are younger grew up watching our parents and what I was telling you with my dad come home angry, lost jobs, having to try to figure out, hey, I got to go do fence work or steel work because I lost my job. I don't know when I'm going to be losing my job. I can't, right? All this instability. So what did we learn as kids? Big business didn't give a damn about you, right? Because they didn't care about you. All it was a meat grinder. So why do you care? Right. So now these people are going into the work and they're going to work for big businesses that they walk in the door thinking they don't care about me. Why do I give a damn about them? And most companies reinforce that we don't care about you. You're just a number. Most companies, when you walk in the door, you're given an ID badge with a number on it. And that's how they identify you. It's not Paul. It's not, you know, Sean. It's you're number 91240.
Right, 100%. Right?
So we're reinforcing to people that you don't matter. But then when it's time to work, we want them to act like they're the CEOs of the company and care so much about our company. People won't give a damn about our company if we don't give a damn about them. And that's what leaders don't realize.
It's interesting that you say that, you know, but could it come... With all these processes that we're talking about, and Nate, I got your question. I'm going to get to it in a minute. I love Nate. Nate's question is the most important question that we
get
every show. But in this process, I've saw some things, you know, we've all heard, you know, that all people change jobs every 5 years now. But I recently heard one that said, a study that said, if you stay at a job longer than 2 years, you're actually affecting your ability to be a wage earner. If you're an hourly wage earner or anything longer than 2 years, you're affecting your ability to earn, and that you should be every 2 years looking to shift jobs for a pay raise, for some kind of a change. Can you say, like, what you're talking about is saving like a mindset, but can you shift, you know, to keep people longer? Like, what else do you have to do? Because all this sounds great. And I understand what other people are like, oh, look, it's flowers and butterflies everywhere. But how do you save the other side to this? Like keeping people longer with it.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of why we all need to do this, because not only have I gotten, you know, record low safety injuries, right? Now all of a sudden people aren't getting hurt. That's because they care about where they work and what they do. All of a sudden, people aren't making mistakes, because when they do make a mistake, they're not in trouble and they're fixing it, right? And then all they got to do is raise their hand if they do make a mistake, and we fix why they made the mistake, right? All of a sudden, these environments become less and less stressful, which is why most people leave. They leave because of bad managers. And not so much always, you know, like there, I saw the study you're talking about, and they also did other ones. Like, why do you stay? For the people,
right?
For the environment.
You never quit a job. You quit bosses and culture.
Yes. Right. So what if we could create an environment where people had more empathy and love, just like at home, you know, and, you know, what really upsets me about leaders is, we have these people for 40 hours a week. We can either destroy them or we can build them in such a beautiful way. It's our decision as leaders. And we have the ability to change their trajectory forever. If you just pay attention to people, all anybody ever wants is to feel like they're heard or feel like they're a part of something. So give them a vision and give them a purpose, and you will watch people transform into amazing things.
I 100% agree with you. Well, that's what I say. You know, we quit bosses and cultures. We do not quit jobs. You know, you just said it. People will stay at a job that they know they can go to the next one and get $10, $15, $20,000 a year more if they're comfortable or the culture's right, or if they've got the right days off and they don't have to be bothered. I have a mentor, and I'm curious if you've done anything like this. I have a mentor who helped me get into the business I'm in, who talks about, he finds out what days somebody might have something going on. Like, hey, my kid plays softball and the games are always on Thursday night, Thursdays at 4 o'clock. Now in his industry, he can do this. He makes sure that that person's work schedule is Thursdays. They're done by 3. Yeah. They can make up an extra hour on a Friday or a Tuesday. He makes sure of that. Is there anything like that, that you're doing or you're involved in, or can you even do it in your industry?
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of flexibility. People, like, that's the one thing that's nice about this industry. For most people, we're able to flex a little bit on the schedule. You know, to that point, I believe in the power of family, right? Like, a person goes to work every day because of their family, right?
Right.
Because of their goals. So one thing that was really dramatic that I started was I did a rewards and recognition ceremony where I would give awards out to people.
Really?
Yeah, because it enacts the people's serotonin and oxytocin, right? And you start getting the chemicals in the body and everything. But one thing I did was, so if I gave you an award, I would give you these little hokey trophies, but it had a different top on each one, right? So it was like something symbolizer, right? I might give you the boxer because you're fighting with, you know, trying to keep us alive on a program. Or I gave a female leader a queen chess piece because I said the queen is the most powerful piece on the board. It can move in any direction in an unlimited amount of spaces, but its whole purpose is to protect the king. And I said, and you do that by your actions, right? And just the little things. But then what I do is I give them a sealed envelope to take home to the person they love the most. And in the envelope, I've written a handwritten note to their family member and basically told them how much that person means to me and how much they mean to me. And I can tell you that single action changed everything. I even had a person's wife call me and just say how amazing and how much the note meant. And it was something, again, that I met, people at first were like, the engineers were like, this is like some foo-foo stuff. And I was like, no, I said, watch. And it changes people when you really care about them deeply.
Don't listen to engineers. I know anything. Listen, I hired engineers. At you talk about aerospace, a company here in Saratoga, New York, that is like way up on that level. They do power transfer systems. Put it this way, when 9/11 happened, the CEO and the top brass at that company were spirited away into hiding.
Yep. And like, I think,
give you an idea. And they had engineers, and I knew, and never listened to a fucking engineer.
And we have some of the best engineers, but engineers are very like analytical. So it's like, it's the dollars and cents, right? And this leadership isn't about dollars and cents, right? Leadership. No. One thing I've found is it has transformed the way we do business. It's transformed the people in the business. I mean, it went from being a crisis driven environment to where now everything is just seamless, right? It just runs almost on its own. And it's through trust and empathy and all these things, you know, and it's just, it really, I know a lot of people listen and they think, well, how can I do this if my boss is, you know, I've had horrible managers, right? And if you're sitting there, if you're listening to this thinking there's no way I can do this, my boss is a tyrant. Yes, you can do this. And here's how you do it, right? You literally put out a survey. You can use tools like Google Forms or SurveyMonkey.com. You don't do the talking. If you're afraid to talk to your boss, Have the entire population of workers talk to your boss. Put a survey out with questions about the culture, with questions about you, with questions about your boss. And then just show him or her the data. And that will be enough to change. Because if somebody, if you as a person show somebody the data that says we're in trouble, we need to change, and that person says, nope, I'm going to do things the way I always did. You hop your ass off that train as fast as you possibly can, right? Yeah. And you leave that company.
They can't see the curve that's coming.
Yes.
It's time to go. And folks, we're getting close to closing the bar up here. Where it's the last call, but I want you to know, again, I've got a couple of things that just came up I want to talk to you about here, Paul. But at the same time, we're going to find out if Paul's got any speaking engagements coming up. A lot of this stuff, again, is on paulhylinski.com. Hylinski is H-Y-L-E-N-S-K-I. Aunt Rose says, yes, we had a facility manager once that said, you will never be fired for making a mistake, but you will always be fired for refusing to follow procedures. We were very press-oriented and procedurally driven, and I saw that in action, and I believed him. I thought that was always cool. It was simple, to the point, and very clear. Look, I'm a process person also, Aunt Rose. It's in my nature. Give me steps. I can follow steps. Always easy. Chad said he'll have to watch the replay. Completely forgot. It's all right, Chad. This is one of those ones. Watch the replay. There's some great leadership stuff in here. Nate, where did you end up in fantasy football? You have to let me know, because I at least got in fourth place, and I know you didn't beat me because you can't pick. But Nate has the most important question we get. After it is, and I'm going to kind of adjust his question. His question was, do you have a go-to meal after a great meeting? But is there a thing, like, because we never did ask this. What city are you in?
Oh, Maryland. So basically, like,
hold on. This is bullshit.
City, Maryland.
Hold on. Shut the.
Yeah.
Hold on. Now you hear the smooth, silky sounds of his voice, right? I'm going to give you a phrase. Hey, dear hon, I'm going to go on downtown. I'm going to get.
Yeah, you're from Baltimore, huh?
Take the dogs for a walk. We'll get some water from the Zinc. Then we'll head on back, sit down, have a bushel of crabs, maybe go grab a snowball. I prefer me a pit beef sandwich, though, hon.
That's my God. Chaps?
Oh, no. See, listen to me. Chaps. Chaps is where you take people who have never had a pit beef sandwich because it's safe. It's safe. It's the safe place to go. I'm looking for the spot on the side of the road where, you know, because I really think pit beef to me is like Philly cheesesteaks. If you ask somebody where the best Philly cheesesteak is, the answer is what neighborhood do you live in?
Yeah.
I think the same way of pit beef, like where's the best pit beef sandwich? Okay. Where are you going? Cause I'll tell you, my favorite is, there's a firehouse just down the street from Camden Yard that if you get there, it's an actual firehouse that they do pit beef sandwiches at the firehouse before games. Absolutely outstanding pit beef. I'm from Dundalk, brother.
Oh, no way.
I went to EVT, now called Eastern Technical.
Yeah.
I'm from Dundalk.
No crap.
Where'd you?
That's awesome.
Are you from Maryland originally?
No, I'm originally from Newark, Delaware, and I joined the Marine Corps in Delaware, and then I ended up in Maryland, and then I just stayed.
Yeah, I was about to say, because I mean, I know, like, my mom still lives in Dundalk. I got people in Sparrows Point, Edgeview.
That's so cool.
Look, see, I told you this shit was going to make a left turn.
But
now that brings up the great question. But Nate wants to know, is there like, hey, this is where we get our food from, or we had like, this is the meal or the, where everyone wants everything catered from it at that facility.
Yeah. It's by the docks. So it's
the, I know biggest, by the docks.
Yeah, biggest crab cakes, dude. They all like the crab cakes. And I mean, I went vegan 5 years ago. Right. So no, for, it was totally for health. I love it, but they all love to buy the docks crab cakes, and they're awesome. So you want to get anybody to do a spot?
That's a big spot there by the docks. I know what you're talking about. See, looks, that's too funny. I didn't see, and I thought completely forgot to ask you. Listen, folks, Paul and I have probably walked past each other multiple times and didn't realize it. We were probably doing Like at some point we were like, and I was a, and I have him by several years. So it would have been at that point, Sergeant or Staff Sergeant Murphy walking past Corporal or Sergeant Hylinski and not even, I was a douche. I would have been like, get away from me. Be a fucking flight liner. Get away from me.
Yeah,
fucking, you know.
Oh, that's so cool.
That is too. Did you ever send some? We had our flight line and us used to get along well. I was at a doggone 461, the friggin' rainbow ponies. You know, fucking was the worst emblem. But I had the flight line sent over one time. They sent a guy over and goes, "Hey, go get a stack of 6323s. Folks, you just go look up what a stack of 6323s is. It didn't work out for that poor kid. I have a buddy though, Hot Rod, who's getting ready to be a Fulberg colonel.
Wow.
Fulberg colonel from enlisted to chief warrant officer to LDO. Got selected for colonel. And I'll never forget that same incident was going back and forth. And they sent that kid over. We stacked him, zip tied him to a chair, and then shoved him out into the hallway at 461 as our sergeant major and the mag sergeant major were walking down the hallway at the same time. And this was after all the hazing stuff had come around.
My God. So
this was like, you had probably just gotten in. So this would have been like 99, 2000.
Right.
And they shoved him out in the hallway and everybody was like, all I know is they went about their business. We pulled him back in, cut the zip ties, sent him on his way. And Rod went up and the sergeant major was like, who all was involved? He was like, me. Who else? Me. Who else? Me. Tell me who else? Me. And he never dimed anybody else off. And they let him completely go from it. And because nobody was hurt. It was like, it was just dumb shit, but that's too funny. But that also brings me up. I mean, you've done the TEDx talks, which I find very interesting. I think I got a TEDx in me. I think I got one in me.
I think you do just too.
But I don't know. It's one of those ones where I have this whole thing, but any other speaking engagements, any other things, where can people find your, I mean, you've got, Paul, I have to tell you, one of the more interesting people when it comes to leadership stuff that, you know, I've talked to in a while. You know, a lot of people, you know, yes, you did some research and you've repackaged things for what your needs are, but you haven't done it in a way where you're like, this is all my idea. Don't worry about it. I've created this all on my own. You're like, no, I researched this. I talked to this person.
Yeah,
I got people involved and this is my process. Where can people find you? Do you have any speaking engagements coming up? Anything like that happening?
Yeah, I actually have a few coming up next year. The one most notable is going to be, I got my second TEDx. So it's TEDx University of Pacific. So it's actually a pretty large one in Stockton, California. So that TEDx was amazing. I had given myself 5 years and I said, I'm nobody, right? Like, who's going to listen to me on a TEDx? So I applied and it took me 3.5 years and 150 applications. And I finally got my first one. And then after I got my first one, I refined it because I knew how to at that point. And then I ended up getting my second one. And that's April 6th of 2024 will be my second one.
Wow. And now the TEDx is kind of like AAA ball for a TED talk. Is that the way I understand it?
Well, no. And it's actually, so you do the TEDx's and if it gets voted a certain many and you get amount of, you know, like views, it gets promoted on the TED.com website.
Oh, okay.
So it starts at a TEDx and then it gets promoted up to that. They do have certain ones that are just TED talks and they're at, you know, but that's where they take a collection of the best TEDx ones and invite them to come out to do a TED talk.
Gotcha. Yeah. I wasn't sure how all that. So you got that coming up. Any other stuff like, and you've got the four books.
Yeah. I've just been doing book signings. Barnes and Noble's been so great. I got a couple tour dates coming up. Last year was amazing. I actually did book signings. Again, I'm somebody who started from nothing. I was doing book signings at Barnes and Noble's all throughout Maryland. And I have January 6th coming up in Annapolis. I'll be doing a book signing. Are you going? And then I'm actually going to Newark, Delaware to do a book signing on January 24th.
Now in Annapolis, are you going to Third Eye Comics to do it in Annapolis?
No, it's actually the Barnes and Noble right there.
Yes, you go to Third Eye Comics in like that.
Hey, if they'll have me, if they're listening, they'll have me. I'll come out.
I would reach out to them. They probably would. Third Eye Comics is them. Have you ever been to Third Eye?
No, it's someplace I got to hit up there.
I don't care if you like comic books or not. Third Eye is a massive place. And then you walk two doors down and they have Third Eye board games. Wow. And it's this massive place of board games, skateboards, and albums. And it's just this massive facility. Third Eye is Third Eye is one of those places where people are like, yeah, you know, George Lucas just walked in the door because he was looking, because he saw a comic book store. It's like that massive.
Oh, wow. That okay. I'll definitely hit that up.
Yeah. I mean, and folks, again, check out Paul's website, paulhylinski.com. I've scanned through this a couple of times, and there's just so much he's got on here. He's got speaks. He's got, you can book him online. He's got podcasts. I mean, they're really, he said something about he's deleting all the other podcasts and only leaving this one up there because the others don't matter. I just heard, at least that's what I heard in my head. He's deleting. That was what I heard.
There you go. I mean,
you've got so much going on. With a lot of this, though, one of the other questions I have is, where was there ever a time, because we're almost done, we got a couple minutes here, but I did want to ask this question for everyone, because I think a lot of people hear us talk about, well, I instituted this and I instituted that. Was there ever a point where you're like, shit, this doesn't work?
Yeah, absolutely. I've done a bunch of things that didn't work. I tried a QR code to force people to have conversations, right? I tried where I couldn't get the supervisors to have conversations with the hourly employees before they wrote them up. So I made them have to do a QR code that had a speech that they had to say and then questions they had to ask the hourly person to force them to work it. Nobody used it. And then I ended up being like, why is nobody using it? They said, because it's stupid. And so like things just failed. And yeah, I've tried probably 50 things, but the difference and the thing that leaders need to take away is who the hell cares? Try it. If it fails, pivot. Try something else. If it fails, pivot. Try something else. Eventually, you get a winner, right? But you're never going to just by staying stagnant. And if you don't keep moving, you're going to fail, right?
Move or die.
Move or die. And in business, it's the same.
Move or die. I mean, how many times were we told that? Move or die. Yeah. You know, you can stay there and die, but move or die. Look, folks, if you're finding Paul through us or us through Paul, I can't tell you enough. Looking Paul up on LinkedIn, giving him a follow, seeing what he's got going on, connecting with him, connecting with us on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, Instagram, TikTok. We're on everything. Paul's pretty well on everything. He's on Facebook. He's on LinkedIn. And again, it's Paul Hylinski, Hylenski. Again, it sounds cliche. It sounds, you know, like when your kids are watching videos, like smashing like that subscribe button, you know, all those things. Guess what? There's a reasoning behind it. It works. It matters. It's effective for us. It's how these messages get out there. It's how Paul gets his third TED talk and doesn't have to put in 150 applications, sweating every single one of them. If he's smart, let AI write all them applications out for you.
That's the new world.
That's it. AI does it all for him. So make sure you're taking the time and you're doing those things and seeing what he's got on. If you're like listening to other Marines talk, well, guess what? We're going to do it again next week. Folks, we got a gentleman named Michael Allison, another business leader, another Marine who's taken what he's learned from the Marine Corps over. There's a reasoning, folks, that we do these as Marines. We end up in these roles. Guess what? At one point in time, a third of the Fortune 500 were all ran by Marines. There's books written about how we lead. And guess what? We might be assholes, but we're pretty empathetic leaders. Hey, man, I understand that right now this sucks and it sucks a lot, but we got to go do it. Because I'm going to go do it with you. That's how we lead. But now, Paul, I'm assuming that, good night, Aunt Rose, that you've listened to all 211 or 12 of these episodes. You know exactly what's going to come up here. And you know, don't log off right after because we got to talk for a moment. But at the end of every episode, the guest always gets the final word. So what's the final word for us, Paul?
Just one word?
Whatever you need it to be. You got it. Explore it.
I think leadership boils down to a simple equation, a mathematical equation that's been there since the 1930s. It's behavior equals a function of person and the environment. So we have the ability to change people by improving them. We need to do that. But we also have the ability to engineer environments around us. And if we're willing to engineer the environment around us, we could actually change the world.
Alrighty, folks. Be sure to push your stool in.